Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Several days ago, I promised that we'd work our way through the questions and answers that were exchanged between myself and GCN regarding the nature of the show, its focus. One of the questions would you consider yourself a Messianic Christian? And we were really fortuitous in this regard, in that the Hebrew Roots Movement individual, Rick, who had called in from North Carolina, was specifically advocating Hebrew Roots, and the Hebrew Roots Movement and Messianic Christianity are very similar. It's a blend of Pauline doctrine and rabbinical teaching. And so we had the opportunity to address those issues. But still there's some benefits in just knowing where we come from for the new listeners to this program and for the new affiliates for this program. So I'll share a little more about what I wrote to GCN. It begins with, I've written a volume of books, including yadayah.com, yadayah.com. It's a book on prophecy. It proves that God exists and that he inspired his Torah and prophets. So if you're an agnostic, even an atheist, if you are a questioning Christian, somebody that, yeah, I might identify myself as a Christian, but boy, there's a whole lot of issues with Christianity that just don't make any sense. And that I am having a real tough time with the God of Christianity. God says, love me or I'll see to it that you're tortured in hell forever. A God who would tell you that he created the earth in 6 days, making the earth 6,000 years old and not billions of years old. I got a real issue with that. I have an issue with a God who doesn't make himself blatantly known. If that's where you are, you're questioning the issues of religion because they don't make any sense. They're irrational. Or you're wondering if there really is a God and is he knowable. YadaYah.com is for you. A couple of thousand pages focusing on prophetic testimony, all of which proves beyond any doubt that God exists, that his name is Yahweh, and that he has inspired his Torah and prophets. Because they present information that would have been absolutely impossible for anyone to have known apart from God. His predictions of the future are extraordinary, mainly because he's not predicting the future. He's simply reporting our future and our past, because as energy, he's able to witness the past, present, and future simultaneously, and therefore can see where our bad choices lead and can report in our past what he has seen. That's why we've spent so much time and will continue to spend some time on Yeshayah 17 and 18, which are very precise predictions of what leads to and what leads from the war in Syria, and how that ultimately, from cause and effect, is so debilitating on humankind. Precise predictions. I'm currently translating Daniel. Daniel means God judges and vindicates 7, 8, and 9, where the prophet was given this grand sweep of human history, so precise that, of course, those who don't want to acknowledge inspiration say, well, it had to be written after the fact. But, of course, we have extant scrolls that precede the events that are being discussed. And yet it's a huge swath of the most important events in human history, all leading up to the rise of a Torahless one, a beast, today. Interesting, of course, that I've shared with you my conclusion previously, the beast will come from Macedonia. That is verified in this text. That is where the Torahless one that is known to Christians as the Antichrist will come. The one thing, though, that was quite different than what I had previously thought, and then we'll return to the prophecies and yada yada and the benefit, is that I had thought that the beast would use Islam, and I don't think that's the case. All of the characteristics of the beast, all of his agenda, are in lockstep with Pauline Christianity. In fact, it would be impossible to distinguish Paul from this individual if it weren't for the fact that Paul was born in Turkey, which is a possibility as it relates to the birthplace of this individual. But Paul's timing isn't in the last days. But he's indistinguishable from Paul. Christians are going to love him. But as we study these precise prophecies, the only rational conclusion that can be drawn is that God exists, that he inspired these words, that he can be known, that he can be trusted. So those who say, you know, I'm not going to acknowledge that if there's a God unless he reveals himself personally to me, he has. You've just chosen not to avail yourself of the proof. Now, while that book is effective for agnostics, atheists, and those who are questioning their religion, and it begins with the creation account and compares Yahweh's testimony regarding the Big Bang to what we know through science, and reveals that, wow, they are exactly the same. Then after that, I wrote a book called Questioning Paul, and it was designed to prove that Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, was a complete fraud. That's a book that is perfect for those who are open-minded. They may still be religious, particularly those who have grown up in the church but recognize, there's something seriously wrong here. There's too much stuff that doesn't add up. I don't get this Sunday thing. I don't get Easter. I don't get Christmas. I don't get Lent. I don't get the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God. I don't get the Trinity. It's just way too much stuff here. That doesn't make any sense. How could a person that is supposed to be Hebrew be Jesus Christ? Then if you're the least bit open to the truth, if you're willing to discard that which is proven untrue, to embrace that which is proven true, then Questioning Paul would be a great place to start. QuestioningPaul.com, 1,000-page analysis of Paul's letters. Lastly, I wrote Intro to God. You'll find it at introtogod.org. It presents the seven topics which are the most important for us to know about Yahweh. It reveals the nature of His Word. Not only tells you what His Word is comprised of in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, it reveals the oldest manuscripts that we have available. It goes through the textual history, and then it goes through the very alphabet that was used to scribe the original autographs and what each of the letters mean. Then it goes through Hebrew grammar to explain the uniqueness of Hebrew and the relational nature of stems, the volitional nature of moods, and the fact that there is no Hebrew verb that is stuck in time. There's no past, present, or future tense. Gives you the tools that you need. And then it goes through, what are the choices in interlinears and the choices in lexicons and dictionaries? And how do you use them? So it gives the reader a toolbox and a palette for to use that toolbox, to be able to be independent and study Yah's Word on their own. But it talks about Yah's Word, His name, demonstrating, using the vocabulary of Hebrew, using the alphabet of Hebrew, that Yahweh knew how to write His name, that He wrote it 7,000 times as Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh. Those are four letters, two of which are repeated, so it's three different letters. And those letters are three of the five vowels in the Hebrew language, making it extraordinarily easy to know how to pronounce. All you have to do is look how those vowels are used in other Hebrew words, like Torah, like Hayah, like Shalom, like Yisrael. Just look at the way that they are used in other Hebrew words, Eloah, which is the Hebrew word for Almighty, and it becomes obvious how to pronounce it. We examine in an intro to God, so introtogod.org, Yahweh's covenant, which is the centerpiece of His Torah, the relationship that He's offering us, His terms, which are the 10 statements that He etched in stone, His teaching, which is comprised of His Torah. That has four parts to it, one of which is my favorite, which is a comprehensive evaluation of the 119th Psalm, which devotes 22 stanzas to the 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet in alphabetical order, explaining how to properly observe the Torah. And then, of course, there's his invitations and his way. There are seven invitations to meet with God each year. The next one is Passover, along with unyeasted bread and firstborn children. Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim. We'll begin to celebrate them beginning this Sunday at sundown. So it describes these invitations to meet with God and the way, how Yahusha, which is the diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, enabled the benefits of the covenant through his way. This book, IntroToGod.org, provides a reader with a set of tools, the proper perspective to study Yahweh's testimony on their own. Now, prior to all this, and I'm sharing this now for new listeners, I wrote a book called In the Company of Good and Evil. You can find it at inthecompanyofgoodandevil.com. It was designed to present my business experience. I've taken several companies public, one of the few people in the world to do so, leading multiple initial public offerings, followed by Tea with Terrace, which you'll find at teawithterrace.com, which presents my meeting with Al-Qaeda immediately after 9/11 and presents what we could have done back in 2001 to immediately, within a matter of months, eliminate the pain of Islamic terrorism. Following that, I composed Prophet of Doom, which you'll find at prophetofdoom.net. And prophetofdoom.net is the most comprehensive, the best documented, most chronological, contextual presentation of what is known about the formation of Islam, about Muhammad's life, about the creation of Allah. It takes the Quran, reorders it chronologically, and sets it into the context of Muhammad's life using the Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad, the Tariq, which is the history of Islam's formation, and the two topical arrangements of Hadith by Bukhari and by Muslim. That book not only explains why Muslims perpetrate 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts, but it provides the methodology to examine a religion, to demonstrate that a belief system, even one held by over a billion people, is not only fraudulent, but is easily disproved. Done in a very long time. I don't think since the first day this program aired, where I provide a little background in terms of where I was coming from and evidence as to where you can go to verify the claims that are made as part of this program. And so I'm sharing with our listeners that if they want to know for certain that God exists, that his name is Yahweh, and that he has an offer for us of the covenant, how to come to engage in a relationship with him and to know him personally, the best place to turn is yadayah.com. If you or someone you love is still mired in Christianity, but at least is now open-minded and willing to reject their faith when disproven, then the right place for them to turn is questioningpaul.com. 1,000 pages of evidence that proves beyond any doubt that Paul, the founder of the Christian religion, was a complete fraud. For those who have come to know that there is a God, come to know that he has proved his existence and just would like to know what's important, wants to grow with him, the right place to turn would be IntroToGod.org. A couple of thousand pages of analysis on the topics that are most important to Yahweh. His word, his name, his covenant, his terms, his teaching, his invitations, and his way. Collectively, providing the serious reader with a set of tools and the proper perspective to study Yahweh's testimony on their own. For those who are dealing with business issues, who are part of organizations where people are acting badly, if you want to know that part of life and what's wrong with our economy, what's wrong with business in general, what's wrong with the way people behave within organizations, how we have deteriorated in terms of our organizational behavior. An interesting read would be In the Company of Good and Evil.com. It presents my prior life as a businessman. If you like novels and want a novelized account of my personal meeting with Al-Qaeda immediately after 9/11 and a presentation of what we could do that would rid the world of the stain of Islamic terrorism immediately, that can all be found in teawithterrorists.com. For those who are looking for a more in-depth analysis of Islam to understand why I'm so condemning of the religion, so intolerant of Islam, read prophetofdoom.net. It is the most comprehensive, the best documented presentation of the Islamic scriptures ever written. And it proves conclusively, beyond any doubt, that Islam is demonic, that it is violent, and that to tolerate it in our midst is to be merciless. Now, in addition to being an author, I've taken three businesses public, as I've mentioned, in IPOs. At one time in my life, I was a billionaire. I've traveled in over 150 countries. I've been a guest on 1,500 talk radio programs. I'm a pilot, own and fly my own airplane. I've had the opportunity to meet many of the most interesting people in the world and tell personal stories about them. Now, I don't mind personal questions, and I don't mind talking about my past, but in doing this program, I chose to take an alias, a pen name, if you will, Yada, because I wanted to be as irrelevant as possible. I've begun every one of my books by saying, you know, I'm going to come to you anonymously, but should you be interested in my past, because so many people want to know the motivations of whoever is writing or conveying a message that they're just not even willing to consider it unless they know something of the person's past. So I'm sharing with you, if that is a curiosity to you, where you can go to know that. And at the same time, I'm telling you that my hope is to be as irrelevant as possible. The show isn't about me. It's about the failures of human institutions, religious institutions, governmental institutions, military institutions, economic institutions, and the reliability of Yahweh's Torah and his covenant. That's the entire purpose of this show. So I'm irrelevant, and I would like to remain irrelevant. But if you're interested in examining in great detail the evidence, the reasons behind what we do in this show, I've shared those with you. YadaYah.com, QuestioningPaul.com, IntroductionToGod.org, InTheCompanyOfGoodAndEvil.com, TeaWithTerrorist.com, ProphetOfDoom.net. Collectively, they form the foundation of what we discuss as part of this program. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're doing something that we very seldom do on the show. I think I've only done once or twice in the last 2 years, which is to give a little background on your host. As I say, I use the name Yada to be as transparent as possible, because this show is not about me. It is about the failure of political, religious, economic, and military organizations. It's about why we ought not be dependent upon them, and it's about presenting Yahweh so that you know who he is using his words. I'm not sharing my opinion of him. I'm not sharing my interpretation of him, but instead trying to share what he has to say about himself so that those who are interested in knowing God will have the opportunity to do so. Now, in my reply to GCN and their syndication department, I said I'm opposed to both political parties. I'm opposed to patriotism, to militarism, in addition to our bankrupt economic policies. During the first hour or two of the show, I focus on the news in an effort to demonstrate why these institutions are unworthy. It is interesting, perhaps surprising, but the fastest growing segment of our society is comprised of those who have come to realize that there is something horribly wrong with religion, politics, and economic schemes, as well as military institutions. Most people no longer vote. They don't go to church anymore. They are preparing themselves for hard days that they know are to come. They realize that we have made bad situations worse with our foolish invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, and they know that the nation is bankrupt. I'm driven, personally, by evidence and reason. I'm not a fan of faith or conspiracy. I love learning, and I value understanding. So what about you? And I'm writing here to Adam. How would you define yourself? You know, and by the way, I'd love for you to call the show sometime. Messianic Christianity would be an interesting topic. Now, what we got was a fellow who did call about Messianic Christianity in the midst of our presentation of this reply to Adam. So we've had that opportunity. So this is what Adam wrote. He says, I assumed that Messianic Christianity was a possibility for you after listening to your show, but I wasn't sure. Now I know. I am not a Messianic Christian, he says. I don't believe in any denomination. Like you, I'm a fan of reason and intellectual honesty, which is why my belief in God and the Messiah are strictly faith, as I've not mastered my understanding of God on any level remotely approaching yours. What he says is, what he's saying here is that he's acknowledging that whatever understanding he has of who God is, who the Messiah is, it's actually Messiah, it's based strictly on faith. Because he has not devoted the time to understanding what God said as fervently, as focused as we have been in this program. And we're devoted to that. I mean, it's just the reality is that those that I know the best, we are absolutely devoted, focused upon closely examining, carefully considering what Yahweh had to say, and then sharing it with those who are interested. Adam went on to say, I'm opposed to both political parties, too, to militarism and to patriotism. Now, that means that he's part of this growing segment that realizes that we don't need another conservative talk show host to say Democrats bad, Republicans good, military good, patriotism good. And we've got too much of that. And most people realize that it's not good to be political. It's not good to be militaristic. It's not good to be patriotic. He wrote, I've heard that Oscar Wilde said patriotism is a virtue of the vicious. And it is. Almost always, patriotism is used to justify invasions, military attacks. Almost always. If true, that resonates with me, he says. I would agree. It resonates with me as well. Patriotism is the virtue of the vicious. I am one of those you refer to as the fastest growing segment of society. I don't go to church. I no longer vote. After the Paul family let me down, and education, religion, and economic systems and all else you touched on is, in fact, as you say, rotten to the core. I'm assuming that he's talking about Ron Paul and his son that articulate to some degree libertarian philosophy. And libertarian philosophy is really would be the most sensible way to govern. But unfortunately, Ron and Rand Paul have embraced many things, including Republican politics and Tea Party politics, that aren't conducive, and they're very much, at least the younger, is very much devoted to military strength. And there is this hint of religion that permeates their words, too, that is troubling. So I would agree that the Pauls were, for a time, the best hope, and as Adam says correctly, now I no longer play. I no longer vote. Education, religion, and economic system and all else you touched on is, in fact, rotten to the core. I'm surprised, honestly, that you're not a fan of conspiracy. It's one of the things that I wrote to him, that I'm not a conspiracy theorist, because it appears to be everywhere throughout recorded history in our modern era. It even seems to be limited or littered throughout the Bible. Actually, in Yahweh's testimony, he encourages us not to be conspiracy theorists. He has said individuals conspire. Absolutely. Religious institutions conspire, he tells us. Political despots conspire. They conspire to fleece the masses. They conspire to control the masses, to lord over them. God hates them for those things. And so there are lots of institutions, lots of individuals that conspire. He's talking about, in the passages I'm translating now, the beast. And he's conspiring for control, conspiring to be able to present his adversarial position against Yahweh. And so there are lots of individual conspiracies, and yet Yahweh encourages us not to be a conspiracy theorist. And you might say, why would that be the case? And Adam, the answer is twofold. One is that conspiracy, advocating conspiracy, is more destructive on one's credibility than almost anything that a person can do. That the moment you begin to talk about the great conspiratorial trends in society and imply that there is a round table in England and a council on foreign relations in the United States and a bilateral commission and the Bilderbergers and the like, and that they are working with the elite in terms of bankers and pharmaceutical companies and industrialists to render the world so that they are empowered and the rest of the world is enslaved, you just come off as a kook. Bottom line, I don't mind coming across as someone out of step with popular beliefs when I am advocating on behalf of Yahweh. If I say that Yahweh has but one covenant, which means that the basis of the Christian religion, its New Testament, is negated, impossible, for somebody to say, hey, you know, that's a kooky statement. So long as my statements are absolutely aligned with Yahweh's, I don't mind what people call me. But if I'm going to take a stand and talk about the Bilderbergers and about the Council on Foreign Relations, and I'm called a nutcase and fringe for a conspiracy theory, I'm concerned about that because it takes credibility away from the presentation of more important issues, such as why you ought not rely on your government and why you should instead choose to rely on Yahweh. So it is a cesspool into which credibility is trapped. The other is that having taken the better part of a year and having read some 10,000 pages of documentation on the conspiracy that is being advocated, how it was first conceived by Adam Weishaupt in the Order of Illumes, and how it permeated Freemasonry, and how then it was integrated into seminaries, into academia, and then into politics. And having read the memoirs and history of Jacobinism by Burrell, having read Proof of Conspiracy, having read The Best Enemy That Money Can Buy, having read The Unseen Hand, I am absolutely, in fact, even Quigley's Tragedy and Hope. I think I understand it is probably as well as anyone. And one of the things I have found is just like trying to track down the connections between the Babylonian religion and the Egyptian religion and the Greek religion and the Roman religion and Christianity, where the attributes and stay the same of the pagan gods and the feasts of the religion stay essentially the same. They just are all given different names. And if you try to track that all the way through, by the time you're at the end, you've lost the listener. It just is way too complicated, and in the end, there's really no business, there's no benefit in doing it. So, since I can use the news and absolute known evidence to demonstrate that the CIA is counterproductive, that the NSA is counterproductive, that the U.S. military is counterproductive, that politicians are counterproductive, that they are hypocrites, that they are usually lying to us, and that we'd be better off without them, I can use evidence and reason to make that case right from the news. But to make the case that they're all conspiring together, you can't make that from the news. It's an enormous amount of effort, and I'm not sure what you gain at the end, other than to lose a lot of credibility in the process and to be distracted from doing what's important. So, my friend, that's why I'm not a conspiracy advocate. He says, are you familiar with sacred geometry? I'd be interested in your thoughts on that and any parallels you find in the Bible and the Torah. I've also heard many names for God. What of Jehovah, Jah, Yah, etc.? There are so many that it's confusing. There is a pattern in nature that shows intelligent design. And you'll find it in the nautilus shell, you'll find it on pine cones, you'll find it in flowers. It's a repeated pattern. And all that does is say that the designer was consistent. Sacred, no. And I think that once you get into numerology and number patterns and you apply a divine attributes to them, you're really out there in the nebulous world where you ought not go of way too much extrapolation. Other than one formula, which Yah himself repeats often, 6 plus 1 equals 7. Moving on to the next comment that Adam has raised. What about the name for God? I've heard of so many. Jehovah is wrong. There is no J in Hebrew. Never has been a J in Hebrew. There's no J in Hebrew. There's actually no J in Greek. There's no J in Latin. And so God's name cannot be Jehovah. As a matter of fact, even the V is impossible because there is no V in the Hebrew alphabet. So no J, no V. So you're automatically in trouble there. And the He in Yahweh's name, and there's two of them, are not pronounced E, but Ah. So can't be Jehovah. That's just stupid. I mean, for there to be a Jehovah's Witness says that, boy, I tell you, humankind is just stunningly easy to fool. And there's always a religious leader willing to make a buck to fool people. There's still a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses around. It's hard to believe because everything they have predicted was going to occur did not materialize, but there still are a lot of them around, and they will go door to door trying to promote Jehovah. But Jehovah is the name of a false god, and there is no basis for it. I mean, literally no basis for it. You can't find a J, you can't find a V anywhere in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. So Jah would be the same thing. Yah is simply a shortened form of Yahweh. It's not distinguished from Yahweh. It's part of Yahweh. And then you might say, well, you know, I've heard Yahweh. So what's wrong with Yahweh? What Yahweh does is it takes the four letters and it simply negates the proper pronunciation of those letters, the most common pronunciation. For example, God said to Moshe, I am who I am. And he used the verb haya to explain that I exist. You know, a God that actually exists is sending you. And he said, and tell the children of Israel that Yahweh has sent you. That's the way that I wish to be memorialized and known for all generations and for all time. And so the verb haya explains how to pronounce the he, and it can also pronounce the y, because in the middle of haya you find yah, haya. So it's yah. That's what the first three letters would sound like. The o sound is the only challenge, but all you have to do is look at what is the name of the volume of books that Yahweh has revealed through Moshe, called the Torah. The O sound in Torah comes from the Hebrew Wah. T-W-R-H is how it's spelled in Hebrew. The O sound is from the Wah. The most commonly repeated name or word amongst Jews today when they meet each other is Shalom. Shalom, the O sound in Shalom comes from the Hebrew Wah. Elohim is from Eloah. The O and Eloah comes from the Hebrew Wah. One of the more common words that Jews use to speak about those who are not Jews is Goy and Goyim in the plural. The O sound is from the Hebrew Wah. If you look at the most commonly used Hebrew words that have come down to us over time, you'll find that virtually 100% of the time the wa is pronounced as we pronounced an o in English. And there's a legacy in English words. There are so many English words where you see O and W together, like oath and own and owl, and it goes on and on and on. And so once you know how to pronounce the hey from Haya, once you, and by the way, if you look at Hebrew words, 99% of the time that a Hebrew word has a hey in it, you'll see that it's vocalized with the ah sound. And there are some Hebrew words with a wa in it that are pronounced with an oo sound from the W. The vast preponderance and the best known are O. So it's obvious. It's just by looking at all the other words in the Hebrew language, one knows that Yod-Heh-Wah-Heh, which Yahweh ascribes 7,000 times in his Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, is pronounced Yahweh. Adam then writes, you are probably one of the most interesting people on earth, at least that I am aware of. Though it has been a challenge to promote and pitch your show, I assure you that it's not due to a lack of interest. It is mostly due to the dying business model being propped up by an industry unwilling to adapt to changing circumstances. The challenge here is really that talk radio got hit with a really nasty plague. And when we return to Shattering Myths, we have Dwight, who's calling in from Dallas, and we'll entertain Dwight's question or comments. And then we'll also talk about the blight that was perpetrated on talk radio and what is the state of this industry, because it is an extraordinarily valuable forum to reach people who are open-minded. We'll be back in a moment.